Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And today our guest is not nearby, she's far away, and I'll explain why, because it's Lauren Pomerantz, who is living the life so many of us dream of. I'm certainly one of those people. I want to be living her life without any stomach problems, of course, because a lot of traveling involved. We'll explain that in a little bit. A successful public relations agent at the age of 50, this New Yorker decided to give herself a gift that would change her life forever. Lauren joined a travel network called Remote Year that allows you to live and work with other professionals for 4 to 12 months in different cities around the world. Lauren is about 20 years older than most of the other Remote Year participants, but that didn't stop her. Lauren is joining us today from Stockholm, Sweden. Lauren, welcome to Lying on the Beach, or should I say Valkolman? Is that Kolman? Is that how you say welcome in Swedish? Something like that.
You know what? I'm going with it. Sure.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting. Thanks again for having me.
We have a million questions. First off, I'm going to have to ask the obvious thing. Do you feel like a fish out of water? I mean, you're surrounded by so many younger participants. It's you, and you're in another country. Is it just a feeling of constantly being uncomfortable, or are you comfortable with it? Or kind of tell us how it feels to be in the situation ongoing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when I first started the program, I think my anxiety about being an outsider was enormous. But once I got there and I realized that everybody was in exactly the same boat as I was, it ceased to be so dramatic. Everybody was new. Everybody came from somewhere else. Nobody knew anybody else. We all knew that the 50 of us were going to be thrown together for a year, living and working and traveling together. And it was just the great equalizer because we had the same accommodations for housing and for working and for travel. So the years sort of melted away, and you just found the people with whom you were most compatible and had the most fun with, and it mattered so very little.
I mean, I find the whole thing so amazing. So do you know ahead of time, like, I'm going for the year, I'm going to these 10 cities, or do you go to one city and from there you guys decide to go to this city? I mean, how does it work? Is it like a schedule thing, or is
it
figured out along the way, or...?
So what they do is they present you. So there's a group that leaves. Well, when I started this back in September of 2017, there were only 1 year programs. Now they run them for 4 months at a time, or 6 months at a time, or a year at a time. But at that point, they gave you the schedule and they gave me the option to leave in July with a certain itinerary, or in August with a certain itinerary. And I chose the August itinerary. And they told you exactly what cities you were going to be in on exactly what date. So we ended up with 12 cities in 10 countries across Europe, Africa, and South America. Now, the one that I didn't choose was in Asia. There were 4 months in Asia, which I really wanted to go to. But from a work perspective, I was really, I was just apprehensive about how that was going to work. And since I had not been to the places, or most of the places on the list for the August one, I figured, you know, six of one, half a dozen of another, I'll take the one that has, frankly, the easier time zone schedule.
So, Lauren, explain to our listening audience what Remote Year is. Just, you know, two sentences, three sentences, so they get it.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's almost like a tour that is all put together for you. Everything is planned out. You pay the company a couple thousand dollars a month. It is not very much. And they give you housing. They give you an office space. They give you the transportation to the next location and a bunch of local events every single month. And you just show up and they take care of everything. And at the end of 30 days, they tell you, they give you a plane ticket. They pick you up. They take you to the airport and they bring you to the next location. So everybody works remotely. You know, I work for myself. Some people had, you know, certain agreements for the companies to be able to do it. So everybody sort of had a different setup, but it was all remote and it was really, really easy. It sounds so much more complicated than it is. You sort of just get up in the morning and you do what you would normally do, and you go to work and you come home and you figure out where the grocery store is, and then you live your life.
Now, you once explained to me that Remote Year really taught you how to be on the road, you know, doctors, financials, communications, technology. So it was a real education in addition to the travel and the people.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to sort of rethink how you do everything. And even for those of us that do a lot of stuff online, you have to figure out how to do literally everything online now. And so, you know, figuring that out in terms of, like, you know, your insurance and, you know, all of your bills and, you know, what cell phone plan to get, you know, that takes a little bit of time. But you do it. And now I'm able to apply it to my remote years over, but now I'm still traveling quite a bit. And I just sort of pick up where I left off with all those things.
So does remote year teach you that? Who taught you how to do everything?
So remote year was great. They gave us a guide about certain options. So I needed travel health insurance because my health insurance doesn't insure me outside of the U.S. So they gave us suggested companies and suggested plans that other people had used. So that was a really good guide because that's so confusing. I mean, even getting insurance at home is confusing. So trying getting it abroad is really complicated.
My health insurance doesn't cover me in the United States, so I would need to. That's a whole other podcast. Go on.
Oh, I hear you. I mean, seriously, my travel health insurance was the equivalent of like 2.5 months of my U.S.-based health insurance, and it covered me for an entire year. It's amazing.
Gosh.
It's amazing.
Accommodations, the accommodations, because you mentioned them just like accommodations, are they staying in other people's homes? Are they hotels? Are they youth hostels? What do they call what you're living in? Is it like an apartment? Is it like a hotel room?
Apartments. Yep. They're essentially Airbnbs. You know, they get a group rate on all these places. So you almost always have a roommate or two, but everybody always has their own bedroom. Most of the time your own bathroom and a shared living room, shared kitchen. They're just nice apartments. You know, in some places they're better than others, and in certain places some people's apartments are better than other people's apartments. They're standard apartments with all the things that you need to live for the month.
So did you have internet in each place you stayed around the clock, and was it clean?
Yes. So what they guarantee you, so we have a co-working space in every city, because obviously half of this program is being able to work abroad. So the guarantee is that there's, you know, really good working high-speed internet at the workspace and at least adequate internet connection in your apartment to be able to do emails. Whether you can stream, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you can always do the bare minimum from your apartment. But the office is open 24/7 because people work all crazy hours, you know, depending where you're on the world. I mean, for me, I could make my schedule, you know, a lot of what I needed to be the way it works for me. But for a lot of people, they had to log on whatever 9 a.m. was in whatever country they're from. So some people are going to work at 9 o'clock at night. Some are going to work at 3 in the morning, you know, to make their Monday morning meetings. So there's always that available at the workspace.
Were people stressed out about that?
I think in the beginning, because it's so unusual. And I think the older you were, the more stressed you were about it. The recently out of college kids, I think, had an easier time because they're used to pulling all-nighters. You know, for some of the older folks, it's been a long time since we were doing that.
Yeah, but if you travel, you know how to do it. You understand the concept and you know that it'll get done. And the fact that your night is our day and our day, you know, is your night, you know, also helps with the shifting of hours.
Yeah, it just takes getting used to. For me, you know, I've been out of college quite a while, so the idea of like going to work and starting to do something at 10 o'clock at night took some training. And I had to do it just not all that often, but every time I did, I'm like, okay, this is how I do. Just pretend it's, you know, 1988 and I have a paper due tomorrow.
Right.
So,
And I'm going back to the accommodations again because I'm still wrapping my head around. So let's say you go to this room and this little apartment they've given you, and you don't like it or it's really bad. Can you change it? Can you complain to somebody, or that you stuck with there for a month? Or how does that work if things aren't as you wanted them?
Well, so part of the deal is kind of accepting the ups and downs of it. The apartments, for the most part, are completely adequate and they're fine. There's never anything like terribly wrong with them. Some are nicer than others. If there is a problem, like we had a problem with our plumbing in Lisbon, and they put us up in a hotel for a few days while that got fixed. So, but basically you get what you're given unless there's a big problem. Now, the amazing thing about this is there was 50 people in our group, and we had two people that traveled with us from the company that took care of all of our problems. We had two program leaders who traveled with us and answered all of our questions. And you have a problem, for example, with the plumbing, I, you know, send Sarah a message and she figures out how to get a plumber over there. And in every city, in addition to the program leaders that travel with us and take care of all that, there's local representatives, local reps, in every city that has the hookup for, you know, the plumber, the doctor, the whomever. So there's always somebody to ask and to get these
and help you with language problems and whatnot. They're there for that as well, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes. I mean, for, you know, if it's really dire, but, you know, we've got Google Translate. So yeah. That's what you use most of the time.
So, Lauren, tell us, why did you decide to make such a trip? You know, what's going on most of people's lives that they decided to pick up and leave?
Yeah, well, I think everybody was at a different point in their lives and had different reasons. For me, it was as simple as I was coming up on my 50th birthday and I wanted to do something really fun. So I was thinking about taking, you know, a grand trip somewhere. So I started, you know, Googling safaris and in Africa and maybe a trip to the Sahara Desert or someplace in Asia or Bali or something. And this ad popped up. And it was for remote year. And it basically said, do you want to travel the world with 50 like-minded people? And we basically take care of all the details. I'm like, well, you know, I do.
That's-
And then I looked at the website, and it was clear that this was for millennials. So I, you know, turned it off, you know, turned the page. I'm like, you know, forget it. This is just not for me. I mean, you know, I'm a middle-aged broad here. There's no way. But, you know what happens once you click on these ads, they start popping up all over the place. So all of a sudden, every time I'm on my phone or I'm online, another ad keeps coming to me. So I start looking at it a little bit more seriously, and I start thinking, well, why the hell not? I mean, there's no reason I can't do this. I'm super immature. There's no reason I won't get along with these guys. So the more I thought about it and the more I read about it, the more appealing it became. And so then I reached out to a couple of people who had done it. Like they had blogs about it. It's pretty easy to find. A lot of people blog about their experiences. And I sent emails to a bunch of people who are on the older side just asking them some questions about it. Because I'm like, this can't be this good. It just can't. So I got some really positive feedback. So I'm like, all right, fine. You know, I'll apply. And at the time, I'm not sure what the numbers are now, but at the time they said they had something like 600,000 applicants for like 2,000 spots. So I'm like, well, I'm never going to get in anyway. So I filled out the sort of dopey application, which was, you know, like, you know, how do you get along with people? And, you know, what are your life goals? And, you know, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? So I filled out this silly application, and they sent me a thing back saying, you know, we're interested. Would you like to move to the next level? So I went through a couple of rounds of interviews, and then I got in.
How long did it take you from applying to getting in, to actually getting on a plane and going?
So let's see. Well, I got accepted from the time I started my application to getting in was really only a couple of weeks. A few people on my trip, it had taken them a couple of months to get in, and I'm not sure what the holdup was. I think they looked at me and said, you know what, she's 50 years old. She's not going to be a problem. She can pay the bill. She's not going to be crying for her mom. So fine. She's like, that's an easy slot to fill.
Right.
So I got accepted, and I sent in my deposit on exactly my 50th birthday, which was May 12th, and I left on August 27th.
Wow.
So there's my birthday present.
Lauren, what about missing family and friends? You're away for a year. Obviously you can call and you can FaceTime, but it's not the same thing as going out to dinner with your friends and family and whatnot. Was that a problem?
You know, in the very beginning, that first month, of course, you're feeling disconnected and you're away with 50 people and everybody's on good behavior and you're still, it's harder to make deeper connections. So you are really missing the people with whom you can have the deep conversations and who really understand you and really know you. And I was fine for the first 2 weeks, but that sort of biological, it's time to go home, my 2-week vacation is up
thing,
like kicked in. And all of a sudden I went, oh my God, I'm not going home ever. And
yeah.
I had a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a breakdown, but like just a little like come to Jesus meeting with myself going, okay, you've got a choice to make here. You did this because you wanted an adventure and you wanted something new. And there's nothing bad about this. Your friends will still be there. Your job will still be there. You know, after so many years of living our lives, we know not that much changes in a year. So just because things were moving so quickly for me didn't mean the rest of the world was moving so quickly. Everybody was exactly where I left them, doing the same things. I can pick back up when I got home. And I had a little talk with myself and decided at that point that since I was definitely staying, I had to start really looking deeper into the group for my good friends. I'm friendly with everybody, having a great time, we're partying like crazy people. But if I was going to survive the rest of the year, I was going to need some deeper connection. So I started looking around and reaching out to the people that I thought that I was going to connect with best and who I might have, a longer lasting, more intimate relationship with. Because I needed, a solid friend base there, sure, just as I do at home. And the amazing thing about this is everybody was doing the same thing. Like I said, it's the great equalizer. Everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's looking for friends. Everybody's looking for their connections. And I made some amazing choices. So, these people are still my friends to this day. It's been, 2.5 years. I'm in Europe right now because of them. And in terms of keeping in touch with people at home, you know how it goes. At a certain age, and I'm not married, and most people are, they're involved with their families and their kids. And you don't see people all that often anyway. So, sure, do I miss, monthly dinners with my friends or whatever? Yes, but you can easily make that up. But there's also, 30 other days of the month that, you're either talking on the phone or texting. The same thing you can do from, Croatia or Bulgaria or South Africa. So it was a little bit of a shock in the beginning, and then it just became just regular life.
I can think of lots of people who are craving something like this. They may not even know it, but I think it fits so many people out there who want this kind of adventure. And it does feel like an adventure. And the cities that you went to, the countries you went to, were they all one wonderful adventure after another? Or was it like, oh, I hated the month I spent? Because, if you don't like a place, you're going to be there for a month or more. I mean, were there moments oh, no, I can't take Lisbon for another day or anything like that?
There were a couple that were just totally huge bummers. Sofia, Bulgaria in December, I wouldn't recommend to anybody.
Okay.
I'm sure it's great in the summertime and it's beautiful, but in the winter it just blows.
Yeah.
It's cold, it's dark. The people were really unfriendly. I kept getting thrown out of cabs. I don't know why. I think I got thrown out of 60% of the cabs I got into. I'd tell them where I'm going and they'd be like, no. Throw me out in the cold. So,
that was
not a particularly positive experience. And we went to where was it? Cordoba, Argentina. Don't ask me why.
Mm.
There's nothing there.
Nothing.
There's nothing there. I mean, we did a city tour and they brought us by an empty city pool as like one of the things as like a landmark. None of us could figure out what we were doing there.
And you're there for a month. You're there for a month.
I was. Well, I actually took off on my own and went to Chile for about a week. I just had it. So I booked a flight to leave the next day for Santiago. So I went to Santiago, and then I went to Valparaiso, Chile, and just started bopping around by myself and met up with a couple of friends there.
And you could drop in and out on this plan?
Yeah, well, the thing is you pay your money. What you do once they receive your cash, it's up to you. So...
Makes sense, sure.
Lauren, tell us, how much about is this thing to do, and how much extra money did you need for the year?
So for me, it's $2,000 a month. It's $5,000 up front, and it is $2,000 a month. So the whole thing comes out to $2,000 of that $5,000 deposit goes for your last month. So in total, it's $27,000 for the year.
Your flights? Your transportation and your
mm-hmm.
housing. That's all you're getting.
Yep.
And having a guided person there that you can talk
and,
to.
And a bunch of events. So it takes care of your housing, your transportation, the workspace, and a bunch of local events a month. So yeah, like your co-working space. So that's incredible. You know, particularly if you're a little bit older and it's, you know, it's not that big a deal. For some of the kids, they did end up dropping out because they couldn't afford it. But, you know, for more mature people, it's, you know, it's pretty easy. It's certainly less than we spend, you know, monthly in New York.
Yeah. So tell me, how much extra did you spend? Did you figure, so it cost you about $30,000 a year for remote year. And then how much extra do you think you spent or you don't know?
You know, let me guess. I mean, the thing is, things are pretty cheap because we are in relatively inexpensive places and you're doing everything collectively. So even all like the side trips that I did, like we'd go to Machu Picchu or went to the Sahara Desert or, you know, went to wherever we went, it's always in a group and you're always getting an Airbnb. So you're probably never spending more than $30 a night, you know, in a place to go. I mean, wine is cheap and really that's what else do you need? So I probably spent another $25,000 maybe, maybe $30,000.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
And, yeah, I mean, and that's with that flights to all sorts of other places and travel to all sorts of other places and accommodations in other places.
And food.
And food and wine and experiences and, you know, museums and safaris and skydiving and shark diving and, you know, all sorts of crazy things. Balloon rides over the Teotihuacan pyramids in Mexico. So, and all that stuff adds up, but it's worth it.
So tell us about the other people.
Lois,
on what?
For me, it'd be a little bit cheaper because I could deduct the skydiving. So I'm not
And the wine.
I'm saving
Lauren
money.
Would be very disappointed in the amount of wine that you consume.
Oh, yeah, and the wine. I'm saving a lot of wine.
He would only be saying to everybody, do you have iced tea? And do you do refills for free?
Well, and is it bottled water? I need bottled water, please.
And trust me, Steve would be an asset on the trip because he would find the inexpensive things and everybody would be following him saying, oh, my God, free iced tea. Let's do that, you know?
And also, if I got sick, everybody would say, oh, where did he go last night? Let's avoid that place because I'll be going to
go again. So, Lauren, it's very interesting. Tell us about, you know, just for a short bit, the other people, were these crazy people, were they rejects, they just come out of an insane asylum, were they married, did some of them, you know, try to, you know, do bad things to themselves on the trip, you know, what was the complexion like?
What is Lois thinking? I don't even understand.
Lois, I hate to tell you this, I'm going to so dash your dreams and your expectations. Everybody was so surprisingly normal. They all just wanted an adventure. They were all just looking for something.
Right.
Exciting to do. And for the most part, I would say there's sort of two categories of people on this trip. There were the few of us that were 40 and over, and that was like a handful of people, not very many. And then there were the ones that were essentially 32 and younger. And the ones 32 and younger were the ones, I think, trying to get in sort of their last hurrah before they took on that next big job. They got married. They had children, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was those of us on the other side that it, a lot had already done that, or, you know, we're just sort of on the other side of it. We're like, okay, let's have some fun. We spent a lot of years doing the right thing. Now let's have some fun.
So who so were these doctors? Were there IT people?
A lot of
teachers?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Well, we had one psychologist, and she would do her sessions over the internet. So that's the only doctor we have. But the rest were mostly tech people. There were a lot of writers. There were a lot of programmers. There were a lot of people who call themselves project managers for whatever that means exactly.
Right.
People don't really know.
Right.
I don't know.
How old was the oldest person?
Me.
Oh.
You're so insulting.
You're
so insulting. Think before you ask a question, please.
I wonder if there's someone in their 60s or 70s or 80s.
Well,
I didn't know how old they went.
No, so I was the oldest person in our group. I mean, I actually, so the other day I, on a whim, went to Valencia, Spain, and met up with a group there. And they have somebody in that trip. She's 58. So, anyway, it ranges.
Good.
But for our group, I was the oldest. And I think I was the oldest person who had done it to date. Now I think it's attracting some older people, which is great because it's so much fun. And it's
Lauren, tell Steve, weren't there some married people?
There were no married people. We had one couple who they've been together forever. And they're actually getting married in March. So I'm going to their wedding. two good friends of mine. So they actually got a cut rate if they share a room and share a bed. So they don't have to pay as much.
What was the ratio of men to women, or women to men, however you want
so
the ratio?
Our group was probably 60% women, 40% men. The group I just met up with in Valencia, though, it was, I think there were 20 women and 4 men. So ours was much more even.
So you think there's more, always going to be more women than men, do you think?
I kind of think so. I mean, just in terms of the, examples that I've seen, I couldn't tell you why, but that's, you know, anecdotally, that's what it says.
And you mentioned some of the bad places you went to that you just listed off. Do you think this company will take that into consideration and maybe take it off the following year, or this is just what they do and they're going to continue going to wherever they go?
Nope, they've already taken them off. So at the end of every month, we fill out a big survey, you know, about what we thought about the place, from accommodations to the food to what we thought the culture was like, you know, and how we felt about it. And so they augment the, the schedules and the itinerary based on that. So they've made a lot of changes since then. And all the places we collectively didn't like, they're not going to anymore.
So, Lauren, I want our audience also to understand before we wrap up, and we're getting very close to that, why are you on the road again? You came home. You're home in New York City, where most people around the world want to live. You're in a fabulous location. You've got a great job, great family, great friends. How did you, you know, what was going on? Without getting too personal, what was going on that you just said, come on, goodbye, I'm going, I know what I'm doing?
Honestly, it was a reunion of my remote year group. We'd been done for a year, and we were planning a one-year reunion, and it was going to be in Mallorca, Spain. And so from there, I decided, and a bunch of other people did as well, like, well, if I'm going to be coming to Europe, I'm not going to go just for 4 days. So then I just started adding on both ends of the trip. So now I've been gone almost 2 months, which was supposed to originally be 5 days. But I now have friends all over the world, and so I've just been bopping around seeing all of them and doing some of it on my own and then seeing other friends. And it's just so easy once you're here and you realize that it's pretty simple to do.
Are you meeting up with other groups, not just your friends, but other remote year groups, or what are you doing?
I did when I went to Valencia, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And I called the leader from my group, and I said, who's leaving Valencia, and can you put me in touch? And 2 hours later, they'd invited me to an event that night. So I met a whole bunch of those people, and it's just like being in a different chapter of the same club.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody understands why you're doing it. It's a very varied group of people, just like ours was. But they all get why you're there, and everybody's got stories to tell. And then I left them in Valencia and went to Cordoba by myself for a few days. And then I met up with them again in Sevilla for a few days. And we went to dinner and went to a flamenco show. It was really, really fun. And from there, I went to Madrid to meet up with a friend of mine from my group who lives there. And from there, I have a friend not connected with remote year who is in Stockholm. So I came here to see her. And another friend of mine from remote year who happens to be here. I'm going to have dinner with him in about 20 minutes. And then another friend from remote year, she lives in Germany, but she's got a long weekend, so we're meeting on Thursday in Brussels.
So there's nothing as far as I'm concerned, even when I travel, there is such a difference in going to a city, a village, you know, a country, where you don't know anyone and you're walking around on the outside looking in, compared to knowing someone and immediately you feel, whether you like the place or not, that it's, you know, like your second home.
That's very true. And the thing is, for a lot of people, they're new to these cities too, so there's a little exploring that you can do together. So you're never really on your own, and it's always just that much more fun. So that's the part that I enjoy. I like the locations, and I like the travel, and it's all excitement, but really, it's seeing my friends and having new experiences together in new places is what really excites me.
Fabulous.
I get to do that.
And I have to ask, though, you get how many people on the trip? How many in the group, in the initial group? You're about 40?
50. 50.
Okay. You've got all of the all these people, is there any drama, like, you know, fight for, you know, these two can't talk to each other? I mean, I can't imagine there not being drama. I mean, like, a dorm always has drama. There's no, with all these people being forced to travel together, it seems like a great reality show. Any drama that happens between the people, or is it all like, you know, peaches and cream?
No. The very first week, it's like, well, who hooked up with whom? And then, you know, who likes whom? I mean, it's really, it's like freshman year of college all over again, or summer camp. I mean, like the very, very first night, I remember this one guy I was talking to, who I'd met on the plane, actually. And he turns to me, and I mean, I've known him like 3 hours. He's like, okay, which one of these guys do you think is my greatest competition for the hot girl? I'm like, here we go.
Okay, good. I'm
here
glad.
We go.
That makes me feel good.
Like
reality television is good.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's, there's, you know, there's a lot of partying. There's a lot of hooking up. You know, and there's like, you know, the swapping and who's crying in my bed over this one. And, you know, because I'm a little bit of a dorm mom. And so, you know, I'm like, all right, who wants to talk now?
That's great, okay, honey.
And it's very cute and it's very fun. And, I mean, not for those that got the heartbroken at the time, but I'd say by about the 6 month mark, it became such a family and everybody became so like sibling like that, you know, died down enormously. And people are like, ew, that person's like my brother. I would never go near them. you know, and I'm sure there were dramas that you know, nobody told old, you know, Auntie Lauren about. But you know, that's fine with me. So,
but you have to go on these trips. Look, Steve and I do a lot of these inexpensive tours around the world. I'm surprised at some of his questions. You have to go with an attitude that, you know, you're on a trip, you're meeting people, you don't care who they really are. You just want to have a good time. You want them to behave and be accommodating, you know, when you're with each other. I'm sure every single person, there was a redeeming quality or something interesting. Someone's father was an astronaut. Another's mother was a writer. Another person was Olympic champion. There had to be enough that you felt very special all year long. I'm sure of it, because that's just the way the world goes. But you have to be ready for adventure, and whatever comes with it, comes with it, and it's not forever, and you go on the internet, and you just, you know, go to another space or something.
That's very true, and the thing is, and to your point, though, I think it's, they are people who have signed up to do this, so it's a self-selecting group of people that are up for the adventure, that are probably easier about a lot of things than somebody who is, this doesn't appeal to would be about. You know, so the accommodations aren't great this time. The flight's not going well, or, you know, something goes wrong. You know, it's a self-selecting group of people that are willing to go on the adventure. And you're right. And everybody's got something interesting about themselves. And, you know, it's just a matter of talking to them all. And over the course of a year, you get a really good chance to get to know a lot of people. I wouldn't know any of these people, well, with the exception of one, who I can't believe I didn't know. She and I lived 10 blocks from each other in New York. We work in the same business. We have the same contacts. We know all the same people. The idea that we didn't know each other is astounding to me.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
incredible.
Amazing.
But the others, there's no way I would have met. I mean, like I said, I'm at least 20 years older than most of them anyway. So, mm-hmm. You know, and they're from Australia and from India and from Germany and China and, you know, all over the place. So I can't give enough credit to the remote year people for you know, creating this thing and for accepting me. And it was just a tremendous adventure. And
well,
like I said,
wonderful.
I've made so many friends.
Yeah.
We learned about a new resource, remote year. I think it's definitely something if you're looking for a real adventure, this is the way to do it. I think it's terrific.
I'd recommend it to anybody. It's not nearly as hard as you think it is.
So, Steve?
So I think that on that beautiful note, thank you very much, Lauren. We appreciate it. Or in Swedish, I think the word for thank you is tack. Thank you very much. And see, I'm trying to get some Swedish in there. And I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And we've been lying on the beach. So long.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.